Good afternoon. It is 1:55. If you're joining us online today, this is the Senate Finance Committee. It is Thursday, April 9th, 2015. On our agenda today, Senate Bill 56, Municipal Energy Improvement Assessment Bonds, SCR1, Civics Education Task Force, SJR2, Constitutional Amendment, General Obligation Bonds for Student Loans, SB 22, Motor Vehicle Tax Collection Costs. For those interested in the capital budget, we're still working on that. Nothing will happen during this meeting. We are going to recess this meeting, and I have asked my members to prepare, if we can get documents rolling, to prepare to come back into session at 7 o'clock this evening. But that, again, will be hurry up and wait, and so I don't want to create expectations. I'm just working as hard as we can to try to get all the documents ready to go so that it can be reviewed by the committee and possibly amended. With that, on today's agenda, is there anything else to come before the committee? Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Kelly, and myself, Senator McKinnon, are at the table today. If I could request Emily Ford from the Energy Policy, from AEA, Energy Policy Outreach Manager, and Jean Terrio, the Director of Energy Policy and Outreach at AEA, to the table. Senate Bill 56 is before the committee, an act adopting the Municipal Property Assessed Clean Energy Act, authorizing municipalities to establish programs to impose assessments for energy improvements in regions designated by municipalities, imposing fees, and providing for an effective date. Your name for the record, and then if you'd like to proceed with your presentation and introduce the bill to the Senate Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Gene Terrio with the Alaska Energy Authority, and with me is Emily Ford, also with the Alaska Energy Authority. House Bill 56 is a bill to offer a new mechanism to municipal governments that have and exercise property tax powers to work with the commercial property owners in their jurisdictions to implement energy improvements to their facilities. In 2010, the legislature gave the AEA or set a goal for a 15% increase in energy efficiency in the state by the year 2020. We have been tracking that progress towards that goal and evaluating where we're moving forward and where we're lagging. The Alaska Energy Authority operates a program through which we assist business owners, commercial property owners, with energy audits of their properties. We've done about 170 of those through that program across the state, and for those properties that actually move forward and make the improvements, they generally see an energy, a drop in their energy expenses on a yearly basis of about 30%. So we know there are sizable savings to be had there. Unfortunately, we're not seeing the number of businesses actually do the audits and carry through and make the improvements that we would like to. And in surveys that we've done with those that have done the audits, they have indicated to us that financing to help them do that, clear that initial hurdle of making the investment, is one of the main impediments. So through my interaction with a National Energy Association, I interacted with the participants from different states and looked at mechanisms that other states are using, and the PACE financing is one that is currently being used in about 31 other states. As you can see in the title, it's Property Assessed Clean Energy, and the property assessed is in the importance in the mechanism itself. In this mechanism, by using this mechanism, we allow, again, a local government that assesses property tax to voluntarily stand up a program by which they, the government, through a revenue bond, will collect up a pool of money to lend to private business owners, or they can work with local lenders who lend the money out. But the repayment of those loans are made by a voluntary assessment that is added to the individual property owner's yearly tax bill. Because it has the complete enforcement and collection power of the local government and its collection of property tax, the default rate on these loans is very, very low. With a low default rate, it's a low-risk loan. Generally, the cost of capital or the interest rate that is charged can be lowered then, because the loan is low risk. In addition, through this mechanism, you can allow the property owner to stretch the payments out over a longer period of time, generally between 10 and 20 years. Just with your personal mortgage, if it's a 15-year payback versus a 30-year, you can drop that monthly payment. Our goal here is to offer a low-cost source of capital, a long repayment period, so that on a yearly basis, the individual property owner can actually have net positive cash flow because they have lowered their energy cost more than the yearly requirement to pay back the loan. So it is a tool that's offered for local governments to voluntarily use. The business owners, it's up to them. They can choose to use it if they want. The local government can either come up with a pool of money on their own or work with private bankers. The piece of legislation that we had modeled this statute after was the one that was passed by Texas just a year ago. And the reason that we suggested that particular model is there were a number of protections that were offered in that statute, and those protections are in the bill before you. As Ms. Ford goes through the PowerPoint, which is a quick visual way of going through a sectional, I'll just step in and point out the various areas that do offer that protection, not only for the local government, for the local businesses, and existing banks. I did work with the Alaska Banking Association early on, and as long as a provision that is maintained in the bill, then they are supportive of the legislation. The Municipal League is in support. The statewide chamber has issued a letter of support. So at this point, we think it is just a common sense tool to allow local governments to use so we can continue to move forward towards that goal for energy efficiency.
Senator Terrio, can you tell us about how long your presentation is? Usually when we introduce the bill, we get the mechanics, we do a overview per se, and then we open the public testimony so that people don't just wait to testify. So how long is your presentation?
We can go through the slides in about 10 minutes.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Emily Ford with the Alaska Energy Authority, and I'll just briefly go over the introductions. Gene did a good job of explaining the program. PACE allows property owners to finance qualifying energy efficiency improvements over time through a voluntary assessment on the property tax bill. It's voluntary participation by municipalities and commercial building owners. Mortgage holder consent is required before applications are approved and assessments are placed, and improvements can include lighting upgrades, renewable energy, conversion to natural gas, high-efficiency boilers, and additional energy efficiency. And the repayment obligation transfers with the sale of the property. And as Mr. Terrio had indicated, the lower interest capital and favorable repayment terms can be leveraged from the private sector because they're financed with capital secured by a primary lien on the property. And the longer repayment periods allow the building owner to recognize energy savings while still repaying on the debt. And traditional lending sources can be used, and in Alaska it provides consistency with state energy policy and goals. 31 states have authorized PACE, and there are multiple resources online for both municipalities and businesses who are interested, including marketing tools and sample contracts. And state legislatures must approve authority for local governments to establish PACE programs. As we are researching PACE across the nation, there's a real wide spectrum of the types of programs that can be implemented on the local level. On one side of the spectrum, you have very local government-driven models. Those are for states that have a lot of energy efficiency programs and efforts. These are separate PACE offices, and the government is the one that does the marketing and the interface with the community. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have the private-driven or the Main Street model, which has been developed where the work has been absorbed by the existing assessor's office, and it's reliant on the private sector to market the program. Most often, you see something similar to a hybrid model where all sources of funding are used. The bill in front of you is Senate Bill 56. And I'll go quickly through a sectional analysis. Section 1 would amend Alaska Statute 29 by adding a new chapter, Chapter 49, Municipal Property Assessed Clean Energy Act. 020 would allow for a property tax assessment to be added to the financing for qualified projects on real property. And these improvements must be made to real property, not vacant lots or properties undergoing development at the time, and not to finance or purchase of temporary products or anything not permanently affixed to real property. 030 would require a written contract between the local government and the record owner of the real property. 040 establishes the program, allows local government to enter into a contract with the property owner. If third-party financing is used, the municipality, the third-party financer, and the real property owner must all enter into a contract. The assessment may also cover some fees, administration costs, project development and engineering costs. 050 allows the municipality to designate one or more regions within its jurisdiction as a PACE-eligible region. This is consistent with land use policies, for instance, in Anchorage Title 21, and if you're trying to incentivize a commercial district, this is another tool for local governments to do so. The next two slides cover 060, which defines the procedures to actually create the program. So if a municipality chooses to create a PACE program, the governing body must first adopt a resolution of intent, and that resolution must show that providing the PACE program serves a valid public purpose. It includes a description of qualified projects, the boundaries of the region, a statement that the municipality intends to make PACE available to commercial property owners, and describes the available financing, the municipal debt servicing procedures, how the public can access the public the program report, and public contracts. Next, the governing body must hold a public hearing with the opportunity for public comment and then adopt a resolution to establish the program. And this must include the terms consistent with the publicly available report, and then each aspect of the program can only be amended after another public hearing. The program can only be amended by resolution, and the municipality is allowed to hire and set compensation for a program administrator, staff, or contract for professional services. And the municipality may also impose fees, which can either be a component of the interest rate or an application fee in order to cover the costs of the program. The next two slides cover 070, the publicly available program report. The report must include the map of the boundaries, form contracts, a description of qualified projects, a plan for ensuring sufficient capital, and if bonds are used, the report must include the maximum aggregate annual dollar amount for financing, a method for ranking requests from property owners, a method for determining the interest rate and the maximum amount of an assessment, and the method for ensuring that the repayment period does not exceed the useful life of the qualified project. The report must also include an explanation of the assessment and collection process, lender notice requirements, the review requirements, description of marketing and education services, quality assurance and anti-fraud measures, collection procedures, and a requirement for the appropriate ratio between the assessment and the property value. And this report must be available publicly online and in the assessor's office. 080 requires notice to the mortgage holder required.
And Madam Chairman, that's one of the protections. Working with the Alaska Bankers Association, if you own a commercial business that is currently has a mortgage to a local bank, before you can initiate PACE financing, because the PACE financing going on the property bill would become a superior lien and bump that mortgage to a secondary position, you actually have to go to the holder of your mortgage and get their permission to be bumped to that second position. Across the nation, what we're finding is more and more banks are willing to do that because the PACE financing really is improving the collateral that collateralizes that mortgage and is making any business that uses that facility much more financially viable. And so we, with that provision maintained in the legislation, the Alaska Bankers Association has indicated that they are on board with the legislation.
090 requires a third-party baseline energy audit with projected energy savings to be completed before entering the PACE financing mechanism, and then once a project is complete, the municipality shall obtain third-party verification that the project was properly completed and operating as intended. 110 requires the contractual assessment to be noticed and filed by the municipality in the real property records. 120, the contractual assessments and any interest or penalties are the primary liens on the property. And this gets back to what Mr. Terrio was explaining earlier. Exceptions are municipal tax liens and special assessments. Enforcement is provided in existing statute. Contractual assessment liens stay with the land and are not eliminated by foreclosure. Penalties and interest may be added to delinquent installments, and municipalities may recover costs and expenses. 130 deals with the collection of assessments. And municipalities may contract with another governing body of a taxing unit to perform assessment collections. And this is important, especially for smaller communities that may not have the internal capacity to be able to administer a PACE program. 140 allows municipalities to issue bonds, but they may not be general obligation bonds. They must be revenue bonds secured by one or more of the following: payments of the contractual assessments, municipal reserves from grants, bonds, or net proceeds, municipal bond insurance, or any funds lawfully available for purposes consistent with the chapter.
Madam President, or Chairman, that's another one of the protections where general obligation bonds cannot be utilized. PACE can be a subunit of the borough, and you wouldn't want the entire property payers of the borough to be on the hook. It is a revenue bond, and it is paid back by the monies being loaned out and being paid back by the specific property owners that use the funds.
And 150 allows for the joint implementation, so any combination of municipalities can jointly implement, or they can hire a third-party administrator to implement the program. 160 makes it unlawful for a municipality to compel or a property owner to use PACE, and they may not use any permit, license, or authorization contingent on a property owner using PACE.
This also is an important protection. If the local government chooses to offer PACE, they cannot coerce any business owner to use the mechanism. They can't withhold any license. They can't withhold a permit, anything of that nature. It's got to be completely voluntary on the business owner's side in order to use it if they choose.
And finally, 900 adds the definitions of the program, 995 adds the short title, and Section 2 establishes an immediate effective date.
Thank you for that concise and quick overview. I appreciate the thoroughness of what you've provided for us today. Are there questions from committee members on understanding the bill before us? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just briefly, 130 and 150, that just helps the hybrid model be conforming. Is that correct?
Page 9, Senator Bishop?
Yeah, page 5. You just on the under the PACE models, you got three options, and we talk about the hybrid model, and it appears that 130 and 150 are just makes that all work under that hybrid model.
For the collection parts piece of it, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy, did I see your hand up?
Excuse me, no.
Are there other questions from committee members? Thank you for your testimony today. With the support of the committee, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 56, an act adopting the Municipal Property Assessed Clean Energy Act, authorizing municipalities to establish programs to impose assessments for energy improvements in regions designated by municipalities, imposing fees and providing for an effective date. The public hearing is open on Senate Bill 56. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify? Ms. Wasserman, if you would state your name for the record, and then please proceed with 3 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. The Alaska Municipal League is in favor of this bill. I've talked at length with Senator Terrio about this bill, and it seems a win-win in all ways. First of all, my optional mandatory radar always goes on when I read a bill, and it's optional, so that is fine. It can affect most of the boroughs in the state. There are only two or three that do not collect a property tax, and first-class cities as well. I think we have maybe two or three second-class cities that do a property tax. They're probably too small to take advantage of this, but all the boroughs and first-class cities if you could remove a few, could take advantage of this, and I think it could benefit the business owners and the municipality as well. It allows for a public process, which is very important, so that the members of the community know what the city is doing with the money and know what is happening with that property tax. So with that completes my testimony.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for joining Senate Finance today, Ms. Wasserman. Anyone else here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 56? Off-net, Mr. Chris Rose, are you available for testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Rose. I am the Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project. statewide education advocacy group for renewable energy and energy efficiency, and we are very supportive of this bill. We've been promoting the idea of property-assessed clean energy for a couple of years, and we think this fills a gap that we have here in the state where we really don't have any programs that incentivize commercial building owners to do energy retrofits. As Mr. Cario pointed out earlier, we have seen 30% increases in efficiency, or I should say 30% savings on energy costs for the building owners that have already done retrofits, and we see this as a win-win for both the folks who want to retrofit their buildings and the communities that would like to see more money stay around instead of being exported for energy. So we heartily support this bill and hope the committee will consider it positively today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rose, for joining Senate Finance today. Are there questions? Senator Dunleavy.
Just a quick question. Now, Ms. Rose, would your group benefit at all from this bill? And if so, how?
Through the chair, no, we would not benefit at all from this bill.
Is there anyone else online wishing to testify on Senate Bill 56? Anyone here in Juneau? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. If I could ask the sponsors to the table, I have a couple of quick questions, and then we'll set this bill aside. I don't have the page number. I'm going by your sections numbers. 2949070. On the bullet points, as I was reading the overview, I was wondering if there was a requirement for the communities to be in good standing as far as their credit rating goes. I noticed that you had given some parameters. Being in good standing wasn't one of them that at least was highlighted.
I don't believe there is a specific requirement on that. And are you wondering, or is your concern, whether they would be in good standing to go out to the bond market to secure a source of funds? Or are you asking about the individual property owner being in good standing?
There's not good standing language, so I guess that's it starts. We're getting ready to enter into a relationship between a municipality and possibly a business owner, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
And so I would expect that the business owner should be in good standing. So I guess I'm thinking about other funds that I've had the privilege of reviewing in my chairmanship as the legislative budget and audit chairman, and I'm wondering whether we should include language about a business needing to be in good standing, because then we know that they are handling their finances well.
And Madam Chairman, I believe there is. I'm sorry, I can't put my finger on it, but we understand the question.
Okay.
And we can work with your staff to point out and highlight where that is in the bill, that the business does have to be in good standing and not be in arrears in their taxes, delinquent, things of that nature, yes, or in bankruptcy.
Senator Terrio, under 2949090 in the review requirements of the loan, is there any specific savings requirement for a business to project to be able to qualify? I believe you stated it may need to be, at least the savings may need to be at the amount that the loan repayment would be at. Is that correct, or is there a specific energy efficiency that we're going to be looking for?
There is a requirement that, number one, the business get the audit, then the business show a plan that with the estimated savings, if the improvements are made, that shows that the loan can be repaid. We certainly don't want to put a mechanism in place that incents businesses to make unwise decisions. And so that multi-step process to show that, in fact, the loan will achieve the savings that will cover the repayment is a requirement.
Mr. Terrio, specifically what I'm trying to get to is whether this is an optional program, so I just put that out there, that is very good, that it's optional, and local communities can set their own parameters or add additional criteria if they want to move forward. But in the green programs that I've reviewed,
sometimes there's a benefit to setting a minimum energy efficiency level because people could start borrowing to do improvements at a lower cost that we might be providing through this bill that increase debt for municipalities. And so I just want to make sure that if municipalities taking on that increased debt load, that we make sure we're accomplishing what we want, and that is, I believe, energy efficient buildings. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I believe as they go out to bond, it would be a revenue bond, and the bond owners are going to evaluate the municipality's program to make sure that, yes, indeed, those businesses will achieve the savings so that they can make the repayments that are then pledged to pay back that revenue bond. So it doesn't become an obligation, general obligation. In fact, the language specifically prohibits it from becoming a general obligation of the government. The repayment stream from the loans that are let out are the repayments for the bonds.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Kerry, as we look at, I guess I find it unusual that a mortgage holder would allow them to be second as far as issues that may come up where they're not, you know, most banks, they jealously hang on to that position of being first in line. What happens if for some reason there is a downturn in the economy like we saw here back in the 80s where the real estate prices, you know, took a significant plunge? How do we protect ourselves? Or how is that protection there for those people, especially where the mortgage holder is going to be number two in line?
Through the chair to the question, certainly the individual banks that currently have mortgages out to businesses, they'll have to take that into consideration as requests are made from them to them to consider allowing them to be bumped to a second position. If in fact the economy takes a turn that makes them reluctant to do that, they completely have the power to stop agreeing to that, and so that will bring the PACE financing to a halt. And they have that power. However, PACE would still be available to any business that has no mortgage on it, no outstanding mortgage, because there would be no existing mortgage holder that you'd have to go and get permission from.
No further question, Madam Chairman.
And Madam Chairman, to your first question on the bottom of page 6 is the mechanism that says demonstrating the financial ability and providing a verification that the property owner is, in fact, the property owner. And then on the top of page 7, the person is the legal owner of the benefited property, is current on their mortgage and property tax payments, and is not insolvent or in bankruptcy. So that's...
Ms. Ford, did you want to put something on the record?
And it also requires an appropriate ratio between the assessed value of the property and the improvements to be done.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any other questions? My final question's under 2949-140. It's the bonds and notes, and I'm just wondering whether you believe that municipalities will access the state municipal bond bank to provide backing for any of these.
I don't believe so, again, just because they are revenue bonds that are backed up by the program that they're operating, not a general obligation of the municipality.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that introduction. And now if I could ask the committee to set Senate Bill 56 aside.
And Madam Chairman, we have worked in the other body on a number of little small tweaks that we are supportive of. We'll work with your staff as you consider changes you might be making, and we'll make recommendations on those that we think that you might want to copy.
Would you like to put those on the record or in writing so that the committee can review them?
We'll just provide them in writing to your staff.
Thank you, Senator Terrio. Thank you, Ms. Ford. The next item before the committee is a bill that we've already heard, SCR1, Civics Education Task Force. We had a preview of this bill on 3/25/2015. The public hearing was opened and closed. Mr. Lampkin is in the audience if we have questions. Senator Machicki, could you cover the fiscal notes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note, I believe, and that is, says SCR 1 at the top. The department is Alaska Legislature. The appropriation is Legislative Council. The allocation is council and subcommittees. The OMB component number is 783. There's a zero fiscal note on operating from FY 16 through FY 21. This differs, there's no supplemental for FY 15 and there's no capital for FY 16. This note, fiscal note, differs from the previous version because the $5,900 in travel costs requested on the previous note will be absorbed. So this is truly a zero fiscal note.
Mr. Lampkin, can you confirm that this will be of no additional cost to the state of Alaska?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens is amenable to this being a zero fiscal note. It will have a zero cost.
Thank you, sir. Is there any closing comments that you'd like the Senate Finance Committee to consider?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wouldn't like to take up any more of the Senate Committee's time. I'm just available to answer questions.
Thank you, sir. Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, we heard this in education, and I think it's a good approach to trying to deal with an issue of civics that seems to be a growing problem here in the United States and in the state of Alaska. Support the bill, the resolution.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Any other comments from committee members? Senator Olson.
Actually, I actually have a question, Madam Chairman. As you look at some of the schools and some of the unfunded mandates that they feel like they are under, is this one of those things that if it is implemented by the task force or that's recommended by the task force that they will look at it in the same way that they've got another burden to bear without any extra funding from the state?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's a question that we've been asked a number of times. Senator Stevens is very sensitive to unfunded mandates. It's not his intent or motive whatsoever to increase those any other mandates or obligations that the districts might have. The task force, I'm sure, as it proceeds and does its work, will be very sensitive to that issue.
Last question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
It has to do with, so you've not heard from any of the school districts themselves or the superintendents or teachers, superintendents in particular, as to whether they're in favor of this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't believe we have anything in writing or on record from the districts other than general support. The superintendents were concerned that in a prior draft of this task force, the superintendents were named as part of the task force, but because of other changes that we made, they were removed as members of the task force. However, it should be noted that the school boards, the immediate supervisors of the superintendents, have been remained installed as part of the task force.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any further questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Senate Concurrent Resolution 1-29-LS-0237/P from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution 1, Education, is moved from committee. Brief at ease.
yourself.
We're back on the record. The next item before the Senate Finance Committee is Senate Joint Resolution 2. Senate Joint Resolution 2 proposes an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to contracting state debt for post-secondary student loans. Ms. Pratt, if you could introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Pratt, and I'm staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. A couple weeks ago, we went over Senate Joint Resolution 2, but if you want me to go over it again, I am happy to do that. Or Diane can answer any questions.
Are there questions from committee members on Senate Joint Resolution 2? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Again, is there any questions or comments on Senate Joint Resolution 2? If not, Senator Dunleavy, could you cover the fiscal notes for us?
Sure. This would go on the ballot for the folks of Alaska to vote on. Fiscal note is estimated at $1,500 to print ballots. If for some reason it extended to 2 pages, which is questionable, the cost could go up to $22,000.
Are there questions from committee members?
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, I was reading off of the wrong fiscal note, so let me try this again. There is no fiscal note for SJR 2.
Thank you. Fiscal note is 0. Passage of the resolution would require the constitutional amendment to appear on the 2016 general election ballot. Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate Joint Resolution 229-LS0010/W from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Joint Resolution 2? Seeing and hearing none, that moves from committee. Senate Finance Committee is back in order. It's still Thursday, April 9th, 2015. The next bill before the Senate Finance Committee is Senate Bill 22, an act relating to the collection cost for the municipal motor vehicle tax and providing for an effective date. Senator Giesel, Mr. Wolf, if you could introduce yourself and the bill to the Senate Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Kathy Giesel. I represent Senate District N, November, which is the Anchorage area. Thank you for hearing the bill today. Senate Bill 22 is a one-page, fairly straightforward bill. Of course, they all are, aren't they? Since the inception of the motor vehicle registration tax system in 1993, the cost on behalf of the state in collecting these taxes for the municipalities has been reduced considerably, while the rate that they charge the communities has not reduced. So Senate Bill 22 proposes to reduce the amount that the state collects. So the state collects the taxes for each community that signs on to this program. And Madam Chair, there are a number of communities. If you turn to the second page of your fiscal note, you'll see them listed. Those communities are Anchorage, Bethel, Bristol Bay, Cordova, Dillingham, Haines, Juneau, Kenai Peninsula Borough, Ketchikan, Gateway Borough, Kodiak Island Borough, Matsu Borough, Nenana, Nome, Petersburg, Sitka, Unalaska, and Whittier. So all of these communities have their local motor vehicle tax collected by the state of Alaska. Then the state retains 8% of that tax that they've just collected for these communities. They don't incur 8% cost to conduct this activity for the communities. And so the bill proposes to reduce that administrative fee, if you will, Madam Chair, to 5.5%, which we calculate would in fact cover the Department of Motor Vehicles or the Division of Motor Vehicles costs. So that's what the bill proposes. It is not any new costs or fees to the state of Alaska. In fact, it leaves more money in the communities, and certainly in these fiscal times as we're reducing those kinds of things to communities, this could be helpful to them. That's a summation of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill number 22, an act relating to the collection costs for the municipal motor vehicle registration tax and providing for an effective date. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 22? Is there anyone online wishing to testify on Senate Bill 22? Mr. Moore, I have you in Anchorage. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name's Daniel Moore. I'm the city treasurer here in Anchorage, and I won't repeat what Senator Giesel just covered. We very much support the bill, Senate Bill 22, and we appreciate the sponsorship by Senator Giesel. I would point out just a couple things from Anchorage's standpoint, because this is where the problem sort of arose. In 2012, the municipality of Anchorage increased its rate schedule for the motor vehicle rent registration program, basically almost doubling the rates across the board to match those of the MATSU. And we had never had such an increase in all our history. When we did that, basically the amount of revenue collected doubled, and then when you apply an 8% collection cost, which DMV did, all of a sudden they collected double the amount of collection costs from Anchorage, even though the amount of work they did was unchanged. So a very disproportionate inequitable situation arose in 2012, and unfortunately it's continued every year since then. So the municipality of Anchorage is basically paying more than double, about $500,000 more each year to DMV than we ever did before. Well, it really is illustrated as to how this has become disproportionate. The Anchorage area has 45% of all registered vehicles. We used to pay, prior to 2012, we used to pay 45% of this administrative cost to DMV, which is completely fair. We have no problem with that. However, because of the way things turned out in 2012 with our update to our rate schedule, instead of paying for 45% of the cost since 2012, we now pay 59% of the cost. So it's definitely out of whack. The way to fix this is simply to just change the statutory rate that's there from 8% down to 5.5%. That rate has not changed since inception, and with the efficiencies of the system, it really does need to be updated. This would not only benefit Anchorage, it would benefit all other 15 communities across the state. And the benefit is rounded, it's about 3% additional revenue for every community. So I'll just conclude there, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Senator Giesel. Mr. Forrest. We do have for the committee's edification, Amy Erickson from DMV, as well as Colleen Greenshield online. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify on Senate Bill 22? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Is there anything else to come before the committee? As I stated earlier, the committee is still working on the capital budget, so we will stand in recess till no earlier than 7 p.m. tonight. That could get extended and the meeting could get canceled. So we're trying to resolve issues related to drafting on the capital budget. With that, we're in recess. Good evening. It is 8:50, and the Senate Finance Committee is back in session. It continues to be, what date? April 9th, 2015. With me at the table, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, Senator Kelly, and myself, Senator McKinnon. Senator Machicki, maybe we have a motion.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 26, Finance 29-GS1781/I as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of finding out the differences. I would like to first thank all of the staff and the folks who have stayed late to try to help get the bill before us for a conversation piece. I'd like to thank Legislative Finance, Legislative Legal, the Department of Law, the Department of Transportation, and all of the other folks that have been working hard to get this document before us. Ms. Pierre, if you could identify the changes in the documents and walk us through the numbers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Laura Pierre, staff to Senator McKinnon. The numbers for the capital budget, we cut the governor's proposed capital budget by $40 million. So our UGF total is $108,318,036. DGF is $56,325,100. Other is $61,233,800. Federal receipts, $1,274,952,400 for a total capital budget of $1,500,829,300. The changes that are in the CS before you this evening in version I are we consolidated the allocations for the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund. This gives the Department of Transportation more flexibility in how they can disperse those funds to municipalities and complete projects. We also added the Life Alaska Donor Services Program. This is for operational costs of $75,000. And in order for them to access those funds, it requires an allocation in the capital budget. We also added a reappropriation of legislative appropriations for the Senate Special Committee on the Arctic. This is for work to be conducted during the 29th Alaska State Legislature, and that was for $211,000. Again, that's a reappropriation. And we also added some reappropriations to the AHCC account, and those were reappropriations brought forward by members that were lapsing. And we removed the $45 million fund transfer from the Alaska Capital Income Fund to the AHCC account. And as a result, we added $43,237,400 to the school construction grant fund to build a new school for Kivalina per the consent decree and the Casile lawsuit.
Are there questions from committee members?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to say I know you thanked Legislative Finance and Legislative Legal, but I'd specifically like to thank Hillary Martin over at Legislative Legal, who has been working around the clock to get us these CSs, as well as Rob Carpenter in Legislative Finance and David and Amanda.
Thank you so much for that addition. With that, I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objections to adopting the CS? Seeing none, we have working draft 29-GS1781/I before the committee. If I could direct the committee's attention to amendment number one. Senator Machicki, well, I'll offer amendment number one and hope that someone objects so we can do it. Thank you. Amendment number one, was brought to us by the administration. I believe it was early today, but the time is starting to run together. We have an emergency happening on the Dalton Highway. Is there Mary Soroki or Pat Pitney? Would you like to come forward and speak to amendment number one from the administration's perspective?
the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm Director of Office of Management and Budget, and thank you for the opportunity to introduce this amendment. So on March 13th, there was an ice jam on the Sag River up on mile 390 to 410 of the Dalton Highway, and that's just before you get to Dead Horse. That's quite the ice flood over the road, and has stopped traffic. So the road's been closed on and off since March 30th, and when it does open, it's limited to just one lane. We provided some pictures to Senator McKinnon's office earlier today that it is quite the ice rink across the road. The interest of Department of Transportation, actually Commissioner Lucan is there today, and our interest is getting the road open. The industry has been working very closely, providing contractors as well to help clear the road. And yesterday, there was a disaster declaration for the flooding on the road. And what that does is puts us into a faster procurement role. And this amendment would provide up to $5 million to continue to take care of that flooding and to keep traffic passing through.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Yes, Ms. Pitney, is there any potential for federal aid on the highway that may offset these costs in the future?
We are optimistic. The declaration puts in place the procurement, expediting the procurement rules. Then the Federal Highway Administration will come and assess the flooding, whether it does fit within the rules. And if it does fit within the rules, some of the response is funded at 100% federal, and other of the work on the road is funded at 90-10 federal rate. There are things that don't qualify on the federal side, and so it really is their assessment when they come up. But we are hopeful that we're optimistic, cautiously optimistic, that there will be federal aid. Our interest right now is to get the road open. At a minimum, the state is in for $700,000 up front. That's until we've passed that threshold. Then there's no sharing of costs. But past that, then there becomes sharing of costs.
Okay.
Any further questions? Brief at ease. Back on the record. Is the objection maintained on amendment number one?
One more question, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Is there any potential that this is just a contingency and that we may find ourselves being funded and not needing this? I'm not getting in the way of the amendment, just wondering if it's possible that none of this $5 million will be used.
Yeah, at a minimum, $700,000 will be used. The I can share after the meeting the eyewitness account from Commissioner Lucan. He's very cautiously optimistic there will be federal funding, and this amendment is up to $5 million, and he's amazed by the size and amount of ice.
If I might, Ms. Soroki, do you have comments to add that might provide some kind of comfort to the Senate Finance Committee? We've done everything we could to make this as lean of a budget as possible for the people of Alaska, and we are cherishing the reserves that we have, specifically general fund dollars. So could you give us any assurance of what's happening here?
For the record, my name is Mary Sirocki, and I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The department has officially notified the Federal Highway Administration of our intent to seek emergency response funding. We have had conversations with our regional representatives here, and I believe that there's been conversations at a higher level than that. We're you know, optimistic that that the Federal Highway Administration will participate with us on this. I think for the department, the question is always, where are we going to find that rub with the federal administration as to what they consider fundable and what we consider necessary to get the road open? And we know that we have a really big chore in front of us, and we also, you know, are concerned about the fundamental infrastructure of the road once we get the flooding under control and what we might see when breakup happens. So we're working very hard to get the road open. We have great contractors on site, and we've got a plan in place, and we're going to go forward and hopefully get at least one lane going by tomorrow.
Thank you. Any further questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Has this ever happened before where you've had something of this magnitude up there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have had overflow before, but nothing of this magnitude ever. I mean, this is just, if you see the pictures, they're amazing. You frankly are incapable of telling where the overflow ice starts and ends, and I think Commissioner Lucan was even more astounded when he was up there today and flying over it. It's just huge.
Last question, Madam Chairman. Next year, when it gets to be springtime again, are there plans already in place to make sure we don't have to have another $5 million? Because we're obviously in a financial situation that's not going to be probably rectified by next year.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have two projects for raising the roadbed on the Dalton Highway that are already in the funding queue. So we've got those. I think we start on them hopefully this summer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Is the committee interested in seeing the pictures? I believe that's where my staff just went. We have a larger. Okay. Is there a continued objection to amendment number one? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one is passed. Thank you for coming out this evening and providing for the people of Alaska. Senator Olson, amendment number two.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a conceptual amendment, which is number two.
I'll object.
If I could move for that.
I'll object.
Here it is. It's the Kivalina Road that's at $2.5 million. Obviously, there's something in the budget now for the Kivalina School of somewhere in the neighborhood of $43 million. But before you can build the school, you're going to have a road that's going on up there. There are a number of estimates on what the road is going to cost. This is the $2.5 million will give the seed money to try and get it so that give us an attempt to get federal funding from it Bureau of Indian Affairs, the IRR is what it stands for. The governor is in support of this, and it in no way obligates the state to fund the rest of the road, as pointed out by the letter dated April 9th today from the Attorney General's office that states, quote, after the $2.4 million do not require additional funding for the Kivalina Road after the $4 million is separately appropriated. So with that, I ask your support for this road.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there comments from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
I object to the amendment, and I appreciate the explanation by the senator. We just approved, or still in discussion, $43,237,400. There's some of us that believe, and I'm going to go through a few, I'm going to propose a few amendments here in a couple minutes, but there's a number of us that believe that there's issues with moving this forward. And I don't think the state should start getting involved at this stage of the game, involved in building a road, and then potentially down the road there may be discussions about moving a town. And I know that's the senator just mentioned that that wasn't the idea, but I want to get on the record that I think the state obligations at this stage of the game we should not be taking this on. And I guess we're...
Say it one more time. The state obligations are...
I don't think the state should be taking on the construction of the road.
We're going to take a brief at ease till Senator McKinnon returns.
We're back on the record. Thank you for those comments, Senator Dunleavy. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to Amendment Number 2? I would just put on the record that we have been in the process of reviewing several correspondence from Commissioner Hanley in regards to this particular piece of litigation, and we do not believe that the road is part of the Kasaili settlement. So I'll just leave it at that. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
We can do a roll call vote.
Madam Chair, wrap up.
Wrap up, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This conceptual amendment is one of those things that has been certainly an element of concern because of the price tag that's out there, but I think to go ahead and put everything into reality, in light of the decree that was the consent decree that was agreed to by the parties, that there is the recognition that the road is necessary and that it has to be built, whether it's... There's concern, obviously, that the state is not necessarily liable for it, and we see that in the Attorney General's letter there. So with that, I still ask for your support.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Senator Kelly.
No.
Senator Bishop.
No.
Senator Dunleavy.
No.
Senator Hoffman.
No.
Senator Michiki.
No.
Senator Olson.
Yes.
Senator McKinnon.
No.
Madam Chair.
The amendment failed.
Yes.
One to...
Please. Six to one.
Thank you very much. Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, I have a conceptual amendment number 3 that I would like to move.
Object.
Well, Senator Dunleavy, I'd like to hear the amendment, but apparently there's objection already.
Okay, I'll give it a shot here.
You have to wait till the conceptual.
So it's just that it's a conceptual, it's verbal. So the this is legislative intent regarding the Kivalina School. The legislature declines to fund the Kivalina K-12 school renovation addition under the 2011 consent decree and settlement agreement in Kasaili versus State 3AN-97-3782 CIV September 1st, 1999 because of concerns about erosion on viability of the school site. That's A. B. The legislature declines to fund a Kivalina replacement school at the new school site because of concerns about erosion and viability of the new school site. C. The settlement terms in the January 7, 2015 letter from the Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children are unacceptable to the legislation. So basically, this amendment would not fund the project, and if accepted by the committee, would remove the funding. And the reason is the decree specifically provides for the legislation to decline funding, which would not trigger a reopening of the case. This amendment makes these specific findings on the record so that there is no misunderstanding by anyone in the future. It's the purpose of the amendment.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I just shared a legal opinion from Legislative Services that I received late this afternoon. It dated April 9th, 2015. Subject matter, Kivalina School Construction Work Order Number 29-LS0870. I'd like to speak in opposition to Senator Dunleavy's amendment. It is at least based on advice that I received earlier in the day and shared with you around 1:30 from the AG's office, and then this legal memo that was followed up, that it's my belief that the state is responsible for some amount of money to Kivalina, and there is in dispute the issue regarding Kivalina and whether it should be a renovation, which is a much lower number, or whether it should be a rebuild, a new school. And so I would just speak in opposition to Senator Dunleavy's amendment. Senator Dunleavy.
If anyone else, I'll wrap up if anyone else has any.
Would anyone else like to speak on a conceptual amendment number three? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you look at the consent decree, there's pretty strong evidence that it's not up to us whether we're going to fund it or not fund it. It's been mandated, and so because of that, I don't see how the validity of the conceptual amendment that just proposed would be able to go ahead and withstand any kind of legal challenge, especially if the case is reopened.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Anyone else wishing to comment on conceptual amendment number three?
Madam Chair, can we have an at ease for just a couple of minutes?
Certainly, at ease. We're back on the record. For those that might be following us in the Capitol, a document was passed out that I referred to earlier, and committee members were taking time to preview that document. And is there any further comments? Senator Michicki.
Question, Madam Chair, perhaps you can answer. What are the conditions of the money that is appropriated for the Kivalina School in this budget?
There is a direct appropriation to for the Kivalina School, complying with the decree. Ms. Pierre, please join us at the microphone. Identify yourself for the record, and you can provide additional feedback to Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chairs. Laura Pierre, for the record, staff to Senator McKinnon, Senator Michicki, through the chair. The appropriation to the school construction fund is just like any other capital project. It would lapse after 5 years if it's unspent. Any amount is unspent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pierre. Any further questions?
Can I get a wrap
Senator Michicki, wrap up.
Dunleavy.
Okay. I apologize. Senator Dunleavy.
Not a problem. So, Madam Chair, I'm glad you handed out this this memo, and I would just like to direct the committee's attention to the first page. It's kind of a interesting issue, and that's why it's taken so long. So if you go to the second paragraph, note the first line, note as a preliminary matter that this consent decree specifically provides that the parties cannot bind the legislature. I'm going to go through a couple more things, and you're going to see two key words here. One is legislature, one is state. Legislature being the fiduciary, the funding arm of the state government. So if you turn the page in the first paragraph, halfway down, you'll see in the middle of the page, it'll say in parentheses, consent decree, page 6, and right next to that it starts, the consent decree is slightly ambiguous in this regard. And what I'm trying to do here is to clear up any ambiguity so that the legislature, as opposed to the state, I'm going to talk just a little bit more about that, is not necessarily on the hook for future obligations toward the whole Kivalina concept. If you go to the next paragraph, let me just read this in the record. The consent decree requires that the state include the Kivalina, in quotes, Kivalina K-12. Now remember, this is important. When you see state, there's...
Just for a second, can you get it back on the right page here? Where are you reading from?
First paragraph,
nope.
Senator Kelly, page 2.
Okay. First paragraph.
Second page, second paragraph, where it starts the consent decree.
Right.
Second page, second paragraph. So, Madam Chair, should I continue?
Please.
The consent decree requires that the state, and if you overlook this, sometimes you'll, especially at this late hour, we'd superimpose legislature state back and forth, but there's a reason why they wrote it this way. The consent decree requires that the state include the Kivalina K-12 renovation addition, that's in quotes, in the governor's proposal capital appropriations budget bill. The consent decree also provides that if the legislature declines the fund, or places contingencies on the Kivalina School project because of concerns about erosion or viability of the school site, a lack of funding or contingencies will have no effect on the settlement and cannot be used by plaintiffs to reopen the litigation. So what we have here is an issue with the legislature that funds and the state that executes, as is my interpretation, the administration. See, and there's no, and I think there's an issue there that it should have been administration because we are part of the state, but in this letter we are differentiated from the state. The administration, in my opinion, should have been differentiated from the state. The term state should be used. So it's really administration. The administration is not a funding agency. We are. So there has been an obligation to some degree regarding the school that the administration has put the legislature in. That's why we're having this discussion. The concern that I have, and I think is shared by others,
is that there has been attempts this whole issue morphing, what I refer to as a bailiwick, because we're not just talking about the school. There was discussion about a road. There's discussion about a new site, et cetera, et cetera. And I get all that. There's certainly a bona fide issue up in Northwest Arc in the town of Kivalina and dealing with the good people of Kivalina. But this initially was a settlement on a school. And initially it was a renovation at site, starting out originally at $14 million. And again, the concern is that I think we need to be careful about is that we do not inadvertently put ourselves on the hook for something much larger than we think we are doing. So again, if you keep going through the other paragraphs, you rarely see administration, which you see a state versus legislature. Again, in that third paragraph, halfway down, further under the consent decree, the legislature can decline to fund the Kivalina School Project if it has concerns about erosion of viability. This keeps coming up over and over again. The purpose of the conceptual memo number one would have been to remove the funding from here. I certainly would not have objected to funding then coming back and being put into some type of contingency or escrow fund that isolates it as a school fund specifically for the Kivalina School. I just hope that as we go through this process, that is the end result, is that this remains a school-focused fund and not a road, which should be a separate discussion, divorced of this decree, or a town site, which should be a separate discussion, divorced of this decree. And I have to put this on the record, because there are some ambiguities, as the letter itself says. And again, just very important, legislature is singled out as not being obligated. However, there's some discussion in this particular letter from the AG that the state is. Again, administration. So, again, the purpose of the amendment would be to isolate that, take this out, isolate the school issue, bring it back in under some type of account that is, term's not sanitized, but anyway, there's a fence put around it, so that's what it's for, is for school, for this particular school, which hopefully would take care of this whole issue. So I'm done, Madam Chair.
Question.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record.
So anyway, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
That is the rationale behind the conceptual amendment number three. And I ask your support.
I'd like to direct the members' attention to page number three, paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4. The last sentence, failure to appropriate any funding does not, however, resolve the state's constitutional obligations. I maintain my objection, Madam Clerk.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator McKinnon?
No.
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator Dunleavy?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Machicki?
No.
Senator Kelly?
No.
Six nays, one nay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
I move conceptual amendment number four.
You could speak to the amendments before we...
Sure. So conceptual amendment number four is, again, it's an attempt to safeguard the public funds regarding this issue. So any funds, it would read, any funds appropriated for this project shall be placed in a joint escrow account. This is specific to this amendment. Joint escrow account to be spent only for direct construction design for a school structure serving Kivalina. These funds shall automatically, without further action by either party, be swept back into the state general fund if construction is not yet commenced prior to April 2022. So the idea, again, is to focus solely on the school, a road, a relocation, not a new site, the school.
I'll object.
I have nothing more to say.
Senator Dunleavy, I want to tell you that that particular amendment is very intriguing to me. I think that it has merit. I think that the previous amendment has merit as far as discussion and reducing the state's liability in a piece of legislation and litigation that we have before us. I would commit to working towards making sure that the children of Kivalina see benefit directly of the appropriation and allocation that's before us in the budget, but I'm going to oppose your conceptual amendment at this time because I believe we need to work with legal to make sure that somehow it doesn't negate the compliance with the decree that we have before the people now. And that might not be all that I have to say on that particular issue, but I would like an opportunity to review that language additionally, at least overnight. The bill would go to the floor, but I'd work with the senator from the district. I believe he supports certainly the money making it to the children of Kivalina. Is there anyone who'd like to comment on conceptual amendment number 4?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
To the maker of the amendment, how do you come up with the date 2022?
Brief at ease.
Back on the record, Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, to Senator Olson's question, it was an estimation of 7 construction seasons, given enough time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the questions.
Madam Chair?
Senator Dunleavy.
On consideration, I'd like to withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Senator.
As per discussion that you just had.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy, conceptual amendment number 5?
Yes, Madam Chair. There's one last conceptual amendment, number 5. I'd like to move conceptual amendment number 5. And basically, it's a very short, small amendment. It would remove all references to the figure of $43,237,400 and replace it with $14,724,714 adjusted for present-day value from July 1st, 2012. This has to do with language in the decree that on the CIP list when it was actually earmarked at that date for renovation of the school.
I'll object. Senator Michicki?
The only reason I'm supporting the total of the 43,237,399 is because I'm trying to keep the state from being at risk of the litigation being reopened and having to purchase an entire school for upwards of $100 million. And on page 5 of this document, there's a discussion about there being a limit to the state's liability. And it was based off the 2013, the cost of the replacement school was based off the 2013 CIP process. I was looking at that for Senator Dunleavy. I was kind of focused on that $14 million, or 14, 24, I can't remember. $14 million number myself and wondering why we weren't on that. But if you look at that second paragraph, it does say, because the consent decree specifically provides that the amount of the appropriation would be determined through the 2013 CIP process, the consent decree places the risk in the project that exceeds the budget on Kivalina. If the project exceeds the cost estimated in the 2013 CIP, which was that $43 million plus number, The state may not be required to provide additional funding. If the legislature takes this approach, the state will have met its obligations, and SEAC would not have a strong argument for reopening the litigation. So being the last school and looking at today's project costs, I worry that the state could be on the hook for far more if we don't meet the obligation at this time.
Any further comments? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I totally agree with the previous speaker that certainly there is the chance, although it doesn't put them in a strong argument of reopening the litigation, there certainly is that possibility it may be reopened. And even when it's reopened, it can morph into whatever it has, and that's what Senator Dunleavy is certainly afraid of. And with that, I respectfully ask the Sneaker, the conceptual amendment, to withdraw it.
I am, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
I appreciate the kind and thoughtful words of Senator Olson. I'd still like to take it to a vote.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. I appreciate the conversation, the opportunity to talk about the children of Kivalina, who have waited for 15 years so far while adults squabble about what's the right direction to go. It is my intent that the state step up to its obligation to take care of the children of Kivalina and its students. Is there anyone else wishing to comment on this issue? Madam Clerk.
Senator Machicki.
No.
Senator Olson.
No.
Senator Kelly.
No.
Senator Bishop.
No.
Senator Dunleavy.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
No.
Senator McKinnon.
No.
6 days, 1 day.
Senator Dunleavy.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate you indulging me in the discussion regarding this issue. I do think I agree totally with you that the kids of Kivalina deserve a school and they deserve a great education. As some of you know, the district is Senator Olson's district, but I did spend 13 years of my life up there, and much of that as an educator and superintendent of schools, and I visit Kivalina on numerous occasions, and the fine folks, kids deserve a great school, and so I'm happy and looking forward to the fact that they will be getting a school. I would like to take you up on the discussion about possibly pursuing something that would once again, throw a picket fence around this concept so that it doesn't morph into something else that we have no intentions of, had no intentions through this decree of dealing with. And then one last thought. When you read this memo, it betrays a weak link in our situation, and that is we are on the hook for what, when they refer to the state, it's really administration, we are on the hook for what administration talks about and leads folks to believe they've agreed to. Administration doesn't fund, we do. So theoretically, if we don't have a broader discussion in the near future as to what limits, if any, we want to place on administration, in this case it was the Department of Education, we may find ourselves back here having a similar conversation. I'm not sure if we want to do that.
Senator Dunleavy, I appreciate the time that you've invested in this process. You did bring the letters to my attention that the Department of Administration through the Department of Education has generated in trying to work on behalf of the students at Kivalina, and I concur with you that they exceeded their authority from my perspective in some of the language that they used for that appropriation. Is there any further amendments to come before the committee?
Just to comment, Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Machicki.
I agree. I actually agree with all of the statements I've heard tonight. The consent decree from Casale versus State in 99 concerns me, especially the fact that it was a settlement. My actions were just clearly, and I think we could try to out-top each other on how much we care about the children at Kivalina and their education, but I know we're all concerned about that. The main thing for me is just trying to protect the state from potentially no ceiling above $43 million in the construction of the school, and I think the action we take in this budget keeps makes it far less likely that litigation will be reopened. That was the reason for my actions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If the committee would indulge me, in 1999 in Casile versus the state, a Superior Court found that the legislature had not met its constitutional obligations to maintain by general law a system of public schools open to all children of the state. In response to the Superior Court order and to meet the state's obligation under the consent decree, we entered into resolve the litigation. The legislature had previously provided appropriations for school constructions. Senator Hoffman, help me if I don't get it right. School construction projects in Ammonic, Kalligonik, Nyamute, Quithlick, thank you, through the Capital Improvement Project Grant Program and passed legislation to equalize funding for rural and municipal school construction needs. In this budget, the legislature is appropriating $43,237,399 for school construction in Kivalina. Kivalina is the last of the five school construction projects the state agreed to request funding for in the Casile consent decree. By this appropriation, the state is providing rural schools with the assurance of adequate facilities funding under the Capital Improvement Project Grant Program and meeting its constitutional obligations to establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children in the state. With this appropriation, the legislature intends to resolve the Casile litigation and further the goal of providing for equal education opportunities and adequate facilities across the state. Thank you for the indulgence. Is there any further comments? The CS for Senate Bill number 26, /I. Senator Dunleavy.
No comments on the CS, but a comment before we adjourn, if you would indulge.
Before we adjourn. Any further comments on the capital budget? Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for Senate Bill 26, Finance 29, GS1781, /Indigo from committee.
Is there objections? Seeing hearing none, 29-GS1781, /I. The CS for Senate Bill number 26, Finance, moves from committee. Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Dunleavy.
I just want to thank the committee for their indulgence on that discussion, as well as the chair and co-chair. I also want to thank this committee for hanging in there today and really working hard at dealing with a budget in this time of catastrophic fall in our revenues. And just one last point on the item that we just resolved. We are going to have a larger discussion as we get on the road here regarding not just education, but other items that are obligated and constitutionally mandated by the state of Alaska. And the question I think that we all need to just mull over is there only one way to do education? Are there other ways to do education? Are there better ways to do education? We're going to be, we're heading to building a new school in Kivalina. Once again, it's a region where my wife is from. My kids were born, and I lived a long time. I lived some time up there, and like the rest of you, I want to see good things happen for all Alaskans and all Alaskans' kids. But I do pose the question, though, and with this: is there only one way to do education? I would submit that
there are many different ways to do it and do it well and provide a quality education for all kids. So with that, I appreciate the time.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank you and your office for giving leadership in trimming down this budget. I still believe that many people in Alaska don't fully comprehend the magnitude of the financial problems the state of Alaska has. Everyone at this table has a constituency, many, many unmet needs, and it is very, very difficult to trim a budget even further than what the governor had proposed. So I thank you for your leadership.
Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to commend you and the co-chair of the operating budget. In both cases, it's been a very difficult process. It's been a very unpleasant process. We believe in a lot of the services provided in the operating budget and a lot of the projects provided through the capital budget. And I was a personal witness to a lot of pressure that you had on you from folks all over the state. We are in a very difficult spot, and it takes an enormous amount of leadership to hang tough in times like this. And you were consistent, you were fair, and you're a tough lady. So thank you very much for your leadership. I think this group stuck together very well, majority and minority. Tough exercise, but thank you very much, both of you, for your leadership.
Thank you.
Is there anything else to come before the committee, Senator Bishop?
I ain't going to let these guys get ahead of me when they're throwing out bouquets, so I'm going to throw mine out, too. Good job.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. The hour is getting late. I would like to thank each of you for hanging in there. I have been on that side of the door waiting, as well as the media. Thank you for hanging in there. We have tried our best to get it done much earlier in the day. We were wrestling with Kivalina. I believe that I put that out there earlier, that we did want to see if we could take care of that in our body before we passed it off to the other body for consideration. Obviously, the Dalton Highway request came in late in the game to make sure that we took a hard look at that. I would like to advise anyone that's still following us from inside of the Capitol or outside in Alaska and other regions, we are under the 24-hour rule now, so our meeting schedule has been modified for tomorrow morning. We notified that earlier in the day prior to 4 o'clock. So tomorrow morning, April 10th, 2015, at 9 a.m., HB 140 legal approval, Alaska Railroad revenue bonds will be introduced to the committee, as well as SB 70 gas line pipeline right-of-way park and refuge. Under bills previously heard, we'll be hearing again SB 71 vaccine certifications for pharmacists, and I believe the capital budget has exited the building tonight, so that will not be on our calendar for tomorrow morning. So with that, Senator Kelly.
If you don't believe times have changed, look at the gallery on capital budget night.
Thank you. With that, thank you to everybody. We're adjourned.